What's your favorite bottle in that herbal pharmacy behind you?
Maybe I am biased, but it's ginger.
Okay. Good answer. Now, why do you like ginger so much?
So ginger is really good for the digestion. It's every herb has a property. Every food also has a property. And so ginger is warming for the digestion, and it opens up circulation, which is really key for digestion to work properly.
Yeah. And when we talk about digestion, because this was actually one of the things that took me a while to understand. What is digestion? It was like, okay, is it I'm burping too much? Is it I'm farting too much? Is that my bowel movements are irregular? Is it that when I eat a big meal or even a small meal, it kind of sits in my stomach for a little bit? Can you explain like what digestion is on a very simple level?
Yes. Digestion is basically the function of our ability to break down foods into something that the body then can utilize, and then also delivering those particles to the right areas of our body. And so we're eating an apple, we're taking a bite, that digestion is actually starting in our mouth, right? We have certain enzymes in our mouth that can help us start breaking down certain particles for us to be utilizing it in our bodies, right? And so from there on, it goes into our digestive tract. It breaks it down further. And ultimately, the value of digestion is being able to extract what our body can use, and then also to be able to transport it to the area where it can be used,
right,
ultimately. And that's why the circulation is the thing that happens after the digestion that is so important. Mm.
So how would someone know if their digestion isn't working at an optimal level?
Yes, that's a great question. It's basically about the symptoms that they may be experiencing. And oftentimes there are no symptoms, right? And then the next thing would be, how do they feel on a day-to-day basis?
That's what it comes down to, is awareness. It's okay, I just ate Chipotle 5 minutes ago. How do I feel? Well, I feel really slow. There's no way I could run a mile right now. Check in again 45 minutes later. How do I feel now? Okay, I'm feeling a little lighter on my feet, but my energy levels are still low. And then checking in 3 hours later. It was the rule of three. I can't remember where I heard it or where I read it, but it's like, check in with yourself 3 minutes after you eat, 30 minutes after you eat, and 3 hours after you eat. So you're right. It comes down to awareness, people. So what's a trick that you help your clients with that they can kind of be more aware of their digestion? And like, what foods work for them? Because what foods work best for ginger might not work best for Zach and vice versa, right? We see so much nutritional information out there that's hypocritical. We don't know what to do. We're lost. And that's why I wanted to have you on the podcast today. And I do want to take a step back after you do answer this question. And I want you to tell people about your journey, right? Coming to the country and figuring out your own holistic health practices and incorporating the Eastern Asian holistic medicine into your practice and what you do today to help your high income earners, your real estate investors, the people that are looking to get their gut health on point and feel physically better. I mean, I'm on your website right now, empoweredbodyclub.com, and I see so many testimonials of people that have had chronic illnesses that you've helped feel better. So tell us a little bit more about how you help your clients, and then I guess pivot into your story a little bit.
Yes. I help my clients by identifying what one or two biggest things are that are blocking them from becoming their most empowered selves internally, and then also in their minds, basically. And so that's kind of the, you know, big picture. My journey with health started when I was a teenager. When I was 15, I moved to the United States to do a year abroad from Switzerland to the USA. And it's always been a dream for me to be in the United States, because the United States has been so glamorized, right? It's the palm trees, it's the weather and Hollywood and the dream, the American dream. That's always been also a dream of myself as a refugee, moving from Vietnam as a boat refugee, getting asylum in Switzerland. Growing up, that's always been a dream of mine. And so when I was 15, I had this opportunity. And so I took it. I moved to the United States. I lived in the United States for 10 months. And in those 10 months, I gained over 40 pounds, maybe 50 pounds. But I stopped weighing myself because I just couldn't tolerate seeing the scale slowly go up. And I just didn't know what to do at that point. After the 10 months, I moved back to Switzerland. And my mom said, like a lot of Asian mothers, they're very blunt, or relatives, they're very blunt. And so she said, "You're fat. You're embarrassing me."
Could have guessed, right?
And figure out how to lose weight. And so I figured it out. And it was actually relatively easy in some ways because I was in a completely different environment again.
Yeah.
But I found myself addicted to sugar.
What type of sugar? What's your weakness?
Oh, gosh. I clearly remember eating licorice, like the red vines, and smoking a cigarette at the same time.
Oh, my gosh. How many grams of sugar do you think is in a serving of red licorice, which I guess is like maybe 4 to 6 pieces?
Maybe even less. Maybe it's even 3 pieces. But yeah. I don't know. Maybe 20, 30?
At least 20, 30, right? It's a can of soda.
Yes.
Give or take.
And I would sit there and eat the whole pack in one sitting along with my cigarettes. And so I didn't have that in Switzerland, and I wasn't smoking at 15 actually, but when I went back to Switzerland, I just felt myself reaching for these, you know, sugar-free foods, for candy, for all kinds of sugar, really. And so slowly I was able to lose the weight.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened next was, when I was 18, we received a green card to come to the United States, something we had been working towards for 12 years. So in 1989, when I was a little child, we came to visit the United States. We went back to Switzerland. My dad said, "Hey, guys want to go to the United States and live there?" And we said, "Yes, let's try it." And so we applied in 1989. I was only 7 years old at that time.
In 1989, Ginger, you look 25.
Woohoo! I love you already.
You look 25. Get out of here.
Yes, I am, gosh, in my early 40s now. But we went back to Switzerland and applied for the green card. And so finally, after 17 years, we got our green card status. And so I actually didn't want to move to the United States at that time because I was in a very, very good school. And in Switzerland, you know, college postgraduate is free. And so I decided I wanted to stay in Switzerland, but with a little bit of tweaking and some promises, I actually decided I'm going to move back to the United States with my family, except my older brother, who was over, 21 at that point, and he didn't get green card status. And so we figured, well, we'll just bring him over later. And so we moved back to the United States, and I was in that different environment again. And so the pounds started stacking again.
I want to stop you for one second. So what was it about America? What was it about the different environment that put the pounds on? Was it the food? Was it the commercials? Was it your habits? Tell me a little bit more about why you think you were more prone to gain weight in America versus Switzerland.
Yes, in Switzerland, first of all, I ate mostly home-cooked foods. The meals, my mom was a cook. And so she cooked for me and my brothers and my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And so on top of that, we would always have snacks around, you know, so I never established healthy habits. And so when I moved to the United States the second time, I basically fended for myself. And I started picking up the habits that the people around me just picked up. They would go out to eat. You know, I was in Santa Monica at that time. We would go out to eat. There was a Thai place down the street from my house. There were other fast food restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so tasty. I mean, they had just enough sugar, oil, and salt that my brain was just in bliss, right?
It's the sugar.
Bliss point of these foods, the sugar, the oils, and the fats, right? You can add those things to anything and make them taste so delicious.
Yeah.
And so that's how you get addicted to foods.
Mm-hmm.
You eat those foods, your body or your brain then hijacks these neurotransmitters, these chemicals, and they light up your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so serotonin, dopamine are lit up. So your
lit
brain
up.
Gets, yes. And instinctively, I think those rich foods sound good to us because they are helping us survive. Back in the day, when you came upon a source of salt, of sugar, of fat, you hit a gold mine. And so eating those foods actually helped our ancestors survive.
Yeah.
Or increase their chances of surviving in the future. So our body naturally thinks, oh, this is great for me, actually.
Right.
But there's no scarcity.
And you know what? So what I heard was it was very convenient to just eat out. And I tell all my clients all the time, it's very important to cook your own food for obviously a ton of reasons. And we don't have to go into them. I think it's very elementary to say that, hey, it's healthier to cook your own foods than eating out and ordering delivery dudes and Uber Eats all the time. But what I also want to mention is the fact that the expectation is always better than the reality. It is the moment you're going to the freezer to grab the Ben and Jerry's fish food. It's not when you're actually eating it. It's the dopamine or the serotonin or whatever it is, the physiological change in our body that's like, hey, this ice cream is going to make us happy. But then you eat it and yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, look, we've had ice cream before. It's pretty good. But the expectation is always better than the reality. So, okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I want to say that. I want to kind of put that little seed in people's minds that it's not as good as you think it's going to be.
Yes. And also, our body adapts over time to addiction. And so in order for us to actually shift our emotions with these foods,
mm-hmm.
we have to consume more and more and mm-hmm. more to satisfy ourselves chemically.
Absolutely.
And it becomes a problem. A huge problem over time.
Huge
right?
problem. Yeah, so go ahead. So the problem is sugar is cancerous. It's
yes,
inflammatory. Yeah.
Yes.
It's inflammatory. Obviously, it spikes our glucose levels, right?
Very
so
rapidly.
Our equilibrium, if you will, of our body is just thrown off. It's going up, it's down, it's going up and down. It affects our quality of sleep, which obviously has a ton of negative implications if we're not getting good sleep. So, I mean, what, and not to make this all about sugar, but what's kind of the ribbon you're going to tie around this present to kind of let everyone know that they should avoid sugar at all costs?
Yes. And so before I get into that, it's not just the sugar. For me, it was the sugar, but everybody's kind of got their own crutch, right? And so, yes, I think sugar is not good for us because it throws our body out of equilibrium. And so here's the thing about homeostasis in the body. Our body likes to have only a certain range of sugar, of salt, of fats, and other things in the blood. If it's over it, our body has built-in mechanisms to deal with that. Too much sugar? Okay, we're going to send an alarm. Let us bring some help in. The pancreas is going to pump out insulin. The insulin is going to go into the blood, pull out some sugar. And what does it do with the sugar? Stores it as fat, right? We all love that. And it does the same with other things. Also, when we're too low in sugar, what happens? Well, we have reserves for that. We have fat cells. All of us do. Even the ones that are very thin, we do still have some fat cells because they are important. They protect us. And so the body will basically pull in sugar and release it into the bloodstream so that we can move our muscles and function. And that same thing happens with all of the other substances, right? Too much salt, well, we have functions in our body to deal with it. And so the way we handle cravings is by actually looking what emotional shift it is that people are looking for. It could be stress. It could be dope. It could be just boredom. They just want another hit of dopamine, which in this day and age, we're just all over the place with our attention all the time and we're glued to our phones. It could be stress. It could be blood sugar issues. And so it matters what the underlying issue is. One of the ways to overcome it is by eating more protein. You know, you've probably heard this before. Eat more protein, they say, if you have cravings, but they never tell you how much. And the reason why protein works is these chemicals, one of the main building blocks of dopamine and serotonin is actually amino acids.
Which is the building blocks of protein.
Yes. And so protein is the building block for these chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And when we continue to hijack these chemicals over and over again for decades, what happens to our natural resources in our body. Depleted.
Depleted. And then we're playing catch up the whole time.
Exactly.
And how do we catch up after 15 years of drinking Diet Pepsi and eating McDonald's?
Yes. We actually need to give our body nutrients and aminos. And so for myself, that is exactly how I broke out of this pattern. I read a book called The Diet Cure for Food Addiction, because it's a food addiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in that book, she basically taught me how to overcome it with certain specific amino acids by balancing my sugar and also by incorporating more protein. So you've got to eat quite a bit of protein in order for that voice to basically calm down and your body to feel more biochemically balanced instead of just using sheer will.
Right.
Will is limited. It's not an unlimited resource we have. And so we want to use that sparingly for the things that matter most to us, like taking that darn supplement, like preparing the protein that we need, at least temporarily. We don't depend on it forever. But in that moment when we're craving, I declare a breakdown. And that breakdown means I'm going to sit back and take a moment to actually take in what's happening. I'm having cravings. I am eating the things that I don't want to be eating. Let me pull out my tool belt. And the protein hack, the lean protein hack, is one of those tools that I can use for the rest of my life to deal with cravings.
Yeah. I actually tell this to so many of my clients. It's, let's not focus on taking things out. And look, if I'm talking to someone who's drinking 3 Diet Pepsis a day and eating sugary cereal every single day, obviously we are going to eliminate those immediately right here, right now with what we got from where we're at. But let's focus more on what we're going to add in to the diet, what we're going to add in to our habits. And then the bad ones will naturally fall to the wayside. So when we talk about getting enough protein, I hear it's 1 gram per pound of body weight. So I weigh 165 pounds. It's very important that I get as close to 165 pounds of protein every single day. Now, you mentioned lean protein. Now, because there are different types of protein, and lean protein is better. And I'm guessing that lean protein is the opposite of very fatty protein. So when we look at a piece of chicken or we look at a New York strip steak, all that fat on top of it means it's a very fatty protein. Is that accurate? And tell us a little bit more about how the listeners today can get more protein in their diet.
Yes. So first of all, I think for function, we don't necessarily need a gram of protein per pound. And so I don't necessarily subscribe to that.
Okay.
The value of protein for me and for my clients, usually we use it as a tool to overcome cravings. And because it's the amino acids in the protein that has the ability to basically calm down the monkey mind and stop it from craving food, this is exactly why lean protein.
Okay.
Because fat just doesn't have the same ability to do that. And so after a day or two of just eating lean protein, people will just naturally have less cravings.
Right.
And that's coming from the protein and not necessarily the fat. I'm not saying that fat is necessarily bad. I think processed fats, processed animal meats are the devil, just because there's so many studies that link processed meat to cancer and a variety of different conditions, chronic conditions. So I think clean, like whole pieces of meat rather than sausage or prosciutto or smoked salmon, just because the sodium is so high. If you're looking at a pound of shrimp, it has 1500 milligrams of sodium naturally occurring. And so why are we adding more to all of our foods? Why are we adding more through electrolytes? Actually, the foods that we naturally eat, especially for eating protein, lean protein from animals, it actually has a ton of sodium in it already.
Mm, interesting. Okay. So I want to pivot the conversation to how you incorporate Eastern Asian medicine into your practice, into your business, into the help and the value that you provide to your clients. So tell us a little bit about that. What's your favorite modality and what are some of the results that you've seen?
Yes. So I went to school for traditional Chinese medicine. I have a master's in Oriental medicine, and then I'm technically an East Asian medicine practitioner. And so that incorporates a couple of modalities: acupuncture, cupping, nutrition, and also herbal medicine. And herbal medicine has always been my passion. And so herbal medicine helped me overcome my own chronic fatigue syndrome. And I think the thing about herbal medicine is that when it is customized and it's diagnosed properly, it can go after the one or two biggest things in the body that is shifting into the wrong direction. I'll give you an example. If somebody, for example, has really, really poor circulation, they're going to exhibit symptoms. They may be having a circulatory system that's not flowing, which means the oxygen, the nutrients, the minerals are not getting to the place where they need to go. And so with Chinese medicine, I can basically open that up. So if somebody has chronic pain, probably their circulation is not working properly in their whole body, but the weakest branch is going to give in first. And so if they have low back pain, it could be circulatory issues in the low back. And so with heat, for example, we can open up circulation, right? Because heat basically dilates the blood vessels, but we can also do that with herbs.
I was going to say, the protocol for that person is sauna and beetroot extract.
Yes. Beetroot has a lot of values. It helps build the blood, and it also has a lot of nitric oxide. And then sauna, of course, opens up your circulation. And so you want to open up that circulation all over your body, because you can't treat a tree by just addressing the health of one branch. You see, you have to actually take care of the whole tree for that whole tree to blossom, because that back pain eventually is going to get either worse or some other part of the area is going to start struggling. And so we want to holistically address the body.
Yeah.
And we can do that by improving circulation.
Yeah. So do you think circulation is the most important thing? Or is that just one of the things that you see is the most common issue that a lot of people have?
Circulation is probably the biggest thing, I would say. It's the heart. And everything that functions in the body is connected to the heart. We call it the emperor. The emperor is very selfish, and for a good reason, because the emperor takes care of the whole kingdom. Every single cell in our body depends on the emperor. It basically pumps nutrients, oxygen. It pumps out waste materials.
Through the blood.
And so that cardiovascular system has tons and tons and tons of pipes. And those pipes are basically the transportation system to pump, they're the roads to basically build your tissues and regenerate your tissues on a continual basis. Yeah. And so you want to take care of the emperor. So the emperor needs a lot. The emperor is working 24/7 for the entire kingdom. And so we got to take care of the emperor by getting the nutrients in. And so a nutrient-dense nutrition protocol is important. If there's too much cold in the body or too much inflammation in the body, it basically will modulate your circulation. Too much heat, like from inflammation, is going to make the circulation stuck. It opens up the circulation, but also generally when people have inflammation, it's coming from things like bad fats, processed fats.
The arteries and the veins so that the emperor can get things through the roads as quickly as he needs to do. So
exactly.
So
I want to grab this.
Okay. What is that?
This is basically an artery.
What is an artery?
An artery basically is a transportation system for blood.
Okay, so is an artery the same thing as a vein?
No, one actually delivers oxygen out and one basically pumps the deoxygenated blood back into the heart.
Okay, so veins take blood from the heart to different organs and muscles and tissues, and arteries bring it back to the heart?
Vice versa.
Okay. Arteries pump it to organs and tissues and things, and the veins bring it back to the heart.
Yes.
Okay. Are they the same size?
No, arteries are slightly bigger.
Okay.
Yes, if you're looking at the coronary arteries, they're actually bigger in the heart.
Okay.
Because their job is slightly more important, I guess.
Interesting. All right, so I'm looking at this model. I'm looking for at this model. So, go ahead.
So basically, this is a half of a pipeline. And this pipeline delivers nutrients to every single cell of the body. And so in a healthy person, it looks like this. It looks clear. There's a lot of space for this blood to flow through. In somebody who has advanced cardiovascular issues from diabetes, high cholesterol, and high blood pressure, it will look like this. You see, this artery is actually slightly bigger than this one. And this one, because it's clogged up, what happens to actually the area where blood can flow through?
Restricted.
Super small.
And the heart has to work. So I'm guessing the heart's going have to work so much harder just to get the right amount of blood that each organ and tissue and system needs, right? So how do we know if our arteries are clogged?
So we can go by circulation. If we have poor circulation, we can kind of tell if we have poor circulation. Usually there's just a lot of symptoms that somebody who has clogged up arteries experiences. There have been actually a lot of studies on that. So basically they examined the hearts of heart donors and they found out, and I just read this study recently, they found out that actually in children who are otherwise healthy, I think it's something like 20-30% of 12 to 17 year olds are already clogged up or starting to get clogged up.
It's because they're just drinking sugary sodas and eating fast food.
Yes. It takes decades for us to develop this. But early on stages, nobody is going to actually look for this in a child, right? That child, when it's in these stages, is actually not going to develop significant symptoms because it's still young enough. It hasn't had a lot of time to accumulate the stresses in the body.
Yeah.
But how do you think healing is going to be when your artery is like this?
No, not enough oxygen is going to get to the body part that needs to be healed.
Exactly. That's why nutrition, what we put into our mouth and also our skin technically, and whether we drink alcohol or not, it just adds up day after day after day after day. And it's the 80% of the equation of health.
80% is nutrition. 80%. 20% is exercise.
Exercise, sleep, and other things.
Okay.
Managing stress.
So let me ask you this question. When it comes to physical exercise, strength training, running, cardio, all the above, how important is that in reversing the damage that's already been done? Or does that help prevent future damage of occurring at a rapid pace?
Both. So I think both are important. Cardio and strength are important. And I think it also depends on the condition. Somebody who has cardiovascular issues like diabetes and high blood pressure and high cholesterol, they have piping system problems, cardiovascular issues. For those people, actually, cardio can be more productive than strength. Because when they do cardio, what happens to the cardiovascular system? It's actually called cardio because it activates the cardiovascular system.
And it's getting stronger.
It's getting stronger. It's getting cleaned out a little bit every time we do it. And also with cardio, we can actually reverse some sugar in the system, right? We can burn off some sugar and some inflammation in the system directly every single time we do it. And so for somebody who has blood pressure issues, and also for those who have diabetes, their numbers are going to be better right after a cardio workout. They can measure before and afters. So you got to do that for many years. If your tree is bent this way, you can't just live a moderate lifestyle and just improve a little bit. You got to bend the tree the other way for it to be more straight.
Yeah. Right. That makes 100% sense. And as someone who is very intentional and aware about my own health, and I'm training for my fourth Ironman, so I can, I can accomplish physical exercises at an elite level. I've learned so much from this conversation. I don't know why the way you explain it is really sticking in my brain, because I was never someone who was good at biology. I never understood anatomy, and I was very queasy when the videos popped up in my seventh grade biology class. So I've always been queasy about these things, but for some reason, the way you're explaining it is sticking so well. And then I also wanted to mention, piggyback off of the last thing you said, when it comes to high blood pressure, for example, when someone goes to the doctor, "Hey doc, I have high blood pressure." Well, instead of recommending 30 minutes of cardio every single day, they write a prescription so everyone can make money. Because there's no money to be made when you're just tying your shoes and running for 30 minutes down your street. So what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I actually recorded a podcast episode a couple weeks ago. It was a solo episode, and I talked about the system, right? And how the system wants us sick, and the system wants us poor, and the system wants us dependent and reliant on the system. And there's only a few ways to break out of that system, and it's to focus on your own personal growth. And that's why I record these episodes. You know, obviously, I like sharing these conversations with my audience, but the most important thing that I like to see from these conversations is the fact that I'm learning each and every single time I have these conversations. And now it's up to me, and it's up to you guys, the listeners, you know, the 400 or 500 people that listen to this each episode. Like, I want you guys to actually apply the stuff that we're talking about here with Ginger. So what are your thoughts on the system? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I heard that episode. So I think there is value in the Western medical system. I'm super grateful for antibiotics when I really, really need them, right? I want to prevent them to begin with, but when I need them, it's there. So I see Western medicine as a way to treat acute conditions. When you need a surgery, because otherwise you will die, oh my gosh, thank you, Western medicine. When you really, really need antibiotics, when you have sepsis, when you're bleeding to death, those things are super valuable, and they actually help us live a longer life by preventing early on death due to acute conditions. Now, when it comes to chronic conditions, that's a different story.
What do you mean by acute conditions?
Yes.
Like, needs attention right here, right now.
Yes. Acute condition basically happens fast.
Fast. Okay. And chronic is lifelong.
Chronic can be lifelong. Chronic can also be for an extended duration.
Okay.
Right? And so I get an infection. Let's say I cut myself and I'm not taking care of it properly. I get an infection. I need Western medicine to survive. I don't want to, you know, get sepsis. I don't want my whole body to be infected. And so that's the value of Western medicine, is to deal with battle wound
issues. Got
it.
That makes sense.
Right?
Okay.
And also to prevent strokes and heart disease, basically, from progressing to the deadly point. But when it comes to chronic conditions, like high blood pressure, like chronic migraines, like chronic joint pains, like diabetes, those meds will only keep us alive, but they won't make us better. They will actually silence the symptom and not motivate us to take action to change ourselves, right? And so it's important for somebody who has high blood pressure to make sure that their blood pressure is within range, not too high, because that's dangerous. Like, if your blood pressure is too high, that means that against the vascular walls, there's a lot of pressure, and that can expand the cardiovascular system, and then it gets taut. The skin around it basically can only stretch to a certain degree, right? Like, do you want to stretch the skin where it's completely clogged up? No, you want to actually remove what's blocking it, right? And so removing what's blocking it requires us to actually consciously change, deliberately change our ways of being and how we're living our lives, right?
Yeah.
And so I think the system, it is good in some ways that it can help us save our lives. But when it comes to chronic conditions, they're not going to reverse the symptom.
Right.
They're not going to reverse the overall health.
Western medicine, pills, basically, medication, we'll call it, is not going to reverse the symptom. You know, you really kind of like what you said. I think the saying is kicking the can down the street. You're just kicking the can and kicking the can. Because once you get on these meds, you're on them for life. You know what? So, you know, because what? The meds work. Great. My blood pressure is down. Great. There's still all that gunk in my arteries, right? Even though my blood pressure is down, that's great. But as soon as you get off them, it's going to go right back up, right? Exactly. So I just Googled how many people die from heart disease each year. And according to health.ny.gov, 697,000 people die of heart disease in the United States every year. And that is one in every five deaths within the United States. So 20% of all the deaths in America each and every single year is from heart disease. And what we learned today is that this is more or less preventable. It's preventable. You know, there are rare instances where you can get heart disease and be healthy and then get heart disease. But guys, it's very simple. You just got to avoid sugars, avoid processed foods. Exercise for 20 minutes every single day. I'm not asking you to train for an Ironman. You don't have to run a marathon every single year, but you got to tie your shoes and you got to get out the door. Smell fresh air, get your heart rate up, sweat a little bit. You're going to feel great. The endorphins are going to be flowing. You're going to sleep better. Because you sleep better, you're going to wake up feeling better with more mental clarity, with high energy levels. Because you wake up better, you're going to accomplish more throughout the day. Because you accomplish more throughout the day, your relationships are going to thrive and your confidence is going to increase. This is a feedback loop. It is a cycle. But if you do the opposite and you drink a Mountain Dew and you eat a cheeseburger from McDonald's or Wendy's, or you eat some Taco Bell before you go to sleep, you're not going to get good sleep. And then you're going to wake up feeling like shit. And then you're like, oh my God, I feel like shit. I don't want to go to work today. Then you show up to work with a bad attitude. And then because you got a bad attitude, your boss and your coworkers, they're not really being nice to you. And because they're not being nice to you, you hate your job. And because you hate your job, your negative feelings and your negative thoughts are going to translate into your relationships. So I don't know. It's a domino effect. Right. Okay. Ginger, before we go, I want to play a game with you. And this is a game I play with a lot of the medical experts and the health coaches and things like that. But before we get to this game, which is going to take 5 minutes, is there anything else you wanted to talk about today? Anything that was really important that you just want to get off your chest, or something that's really important that you think the audience would really benefit from today?
Yes, I think we had mentioned redefining failure and work-life balance. And so for me, you know, I have learned about failure and about work-life balance through YouTube. So basically what I learned by just listening to them, when we listen to somebody, we kind of get a sense of what their beliefs are. And I've realized that they just have thick skin. And so what I did at that point is I sat down with myself and I wrote down, what are my beliefs about failure? What are my narratives? Or like, what did I make it mean to fail? Because sometimes when I would fail, it would take me years to try again. And so what I've learned is that this guy, John Medina, who wrote the book Brain Rules, I got to see him at an EO event in Seattle. He basically said that the difference between those who fail and those who succeed is that those who succeed, they actually get right back up after failure. So that refractory period between failure and trying again is shorter, which allows for them to have more trials. If you have more chances at something, well, your chances of success are going up rapidly. And so for those listening and have failed many, many times over and over again, be bold, build thick skin. Have the courage to get back up. This is what's going to help you build your character and ultimately succeed. And work-life balance, you know, I don't believe it's a success supporter. If you're looking at magic, magic happens when you're polarized. When you basically funnel all of your bandwidth and your energy and your attention into one thing, you can actually excel at that than if you just have a monkey mind and you're paying attention to all of the different things in your life, right? For me right now, my social life, I don't have one and I love it. And I just told my friends, hey, I'm going to take a year off. Basically, I'm going to come to your birthday. I'm still going to celebrate you. You're important to me. And this relationship is important to me. And then I just let it go. And so I focus on my work, I focus on my training, I focus on the top things that I want to make progress on this year. And the thing is that it's not either or, it's not just black and white. You can have A and B and C, but you have to build the habits in those departments by just focusing on those things for short sprints, right? Mm-hmm. If my nutrition is off, if I'm having crazy cravings, I can basically spend a couple of weeks eating more protein, building that habit, and then it becomes mechanical. And then I don't have to exert as much energy anymore to execute on that habit. And so you can do that with a lot of the things that are important to you. And then autopilot. My nutrition is on autopilot. It's a system that I've developed by focusing short sprints and bandwidth on that one topic. And now it's just on autopilot. And I can focus on other things. And it doesn't require for me to consciously think, oh, what do I eat for breakfast? Oh, what do I eat for lunch? Hey, what do I eat for dinner? What am I going to order out? Like, I already know. It's taken care of.
Absolutely. And
then you can just really nail that other next thing that's on your mind. And your health doesn't have to fall apart. I can work and take care of my health at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have that conversation with yourself. It's one of the crucial conversations that successful people have in order for them to succeed. Crucial conversations with others to support you, maybe even letting go of certain environments, of certain people that are not supporting your long-term, you know, desires, and then zoning in on that one thing. And not everything is equally as important. There's one or two things in every single department that is more important than others. If you're spending all of your time, 10, 20 hours a week working out, but your nutrition is not on point, hard to win. But if you're, you know, because 80% of your success is coming from 20% of your input. And so identify what those things are. In business, it might be sales. In health, it might be nutrition. Doesn't take that much time to do food prep.
Right. Absolutely. So to all those people out there, if you want to have this crucial conversation with Ginger, you can head over to empoweredbodyclub.com, spelled exactly how it sounds, empoweredbodyclub.com. I'm actually also going to drop the link to the in the show notes below. And to piggyback off of what you said, Ginger, what I heard was having the right systems in place. Meal prep doesn't have to be, hey, let's cook 6 pounds of chicken and let's put it in Rubbermaid things and put it in the fridge. Meal prep could be, hey, I know what I'm eating this week and I got it in the fridge and I'm going to prepare it that day, but I'm prepared with my meals. So putting the right systems in place. And then work-life balance. This is something that I talk to a lot of my high-income earning clients with all the time, is like, balance doesn't have to mean every single week. You could have a season of sprinting towards your goals. Just like you said, you're in your era right now of just grind, 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 grind. You don't want to socialize every single weekend for 52 weeks in a row, right? And kind of like me, I'm going to tell the audience a little bit. In Q1 of 2023, I was all work, no play. All work, no play. And I intentionally burned out. I was like, I am going to work Monday through Sunday until 11 o'clock at night. I'm going to be up at 5 a.m. every single day for the next 3 months, and I'm going to burn out. And it worked because I had a massive Q1. So Q2, I took my foot off the gas a little bit, right? So those 6 months, Q1, Q2 of 2023 was balanced. It wasn't balanced every single day. It wasn't balanced every single week. It was Q1 and Q2 created that balance. So Ginger, I really do appreciate all the wisdom today and experience, because this is a conversation that I love having. So we're going to play a game now. I'm going to say a word. It's health related, biohacking related, recovery related. Some of them are just completely from left field. And I want a quick answer. Either say good, bad, overhyped, underrated, bullshit, terrible for you, right? Just like a quick phrase. Okay. So I'm going to start, at the bottom, cold plunge.
Yeah, I'm afraid all of my answers are going to be the same. Depends on the person. High blood pressure, don't do it. Certain people with menstrual issues, women who run cold all the time, not as good.
Okay.
The general population who feels hot all the time, good.
Okay.
Next.
Yoga.
Great. Depends on your constitution again. Some more extreme forms of yoga, like hot yoga, not good for somebody who's depleted, but good for the masses.
Good. Intermittent fasting.
Great. Fasting, great fan.
Love it. Question about intermittent fasting. Do you think as a 32-year-old male training for his fourth Ironman, I should be intermittent fasting?
I think you want to be careful before long workouts, hard workouts. You want to actually eat carbohydrates, complex carbohydrates that are not processed to fuel your workouts, because you don't want to tap into your muscle mass. And so if you are doing it first thing in the morning, you want to not do intermittent fasting. But if you're doing it later in the day, you can intermittent fast and then fuel for your workout.
Got
so
it.
Carbohydrates have revolutionized my endurance training.
Okay. And carbohydrates, blueberries, sweet potatoes, oatmeal?
Yes.
Those are the best ones?
The best ones. I think there are other grains that are great as well. Buckwheat, for example, whole buckwheat with the husk on the outside, great. You can do brown rice. You can do some beans. Beans, although they have a little bit more protein, but generally still a carbohydrate, right? You can do other fruits as well.
Okay. So for today, for example, I was up at 6 a.m. and I ran 5 miles. So I should be eating right after.
It depends on your goals. You can eat before to fuel your 5 miles. Like if you were to run a 5 mile race, would you eat before?
Right. Of course.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter as much because you probably have enough glycogen in your muscles stored from just before that you can get through it relatively fast. But if it's like a marathon, you need to eat quite a bit. So if you're training for an Ironman, I've done the half only. Well, I should stop saying only, but you're going to need quite a bit of carbohydrates to fuel it.
Okay. Next term, HGH.
HGH, growth hormone.
Mm-hmm.
You can tap into that resource naturally with fasting, actually longer fasting.
I like that. Ice cream.
How
is it worth it?
How about sugar-free, dairy-free ice cream here and there? Or just regular ice cream here and there. Don't do it too often.
Okay. Eggs.
Eggs. Actually, the egg whites have a lot of sodium. So overall, eggs are fine. I think I probably wouldn't eat too much of it because a lot of people are actually allergic to eggs.
Okay. Almond milk or grass-fed whole milk?
You're talking to a plant-based fan. So almond milk, I think grass-fed milk in terms of milks in terms of dairy milks is better than the regular kind. But generally, I don't want to drink another animal's that is supposed to grow rapidly in its infant stages. I don't want to consume that.
Okay. So you don't need any animal protein?
I do.
Oh.
When I need it. But most days, I'm still plant-based.
Got
when
it.
I have these cravings, I will do a day or two of high levels of animal protein.
I like that. Red light therapy.
Anti-aging, good for circulation, opens up your cardiovascular system.
Okay. EMF radiation, how bad is it?
On a scale from 1 to 10, it's not as bad as nutrition.
Okay.
Or poor nutrition.
Right. Understood. Okay. Blue light exposure, especially at night.
Yes, it's anti-melatonin, and so it's going to produce serotonin, and so not so good for night, especially for those who can't sleep.
Okay, we got like 5-6 more. CBD oil or CBD cream?
I am not that big on CBD. I know that it helps people, so listen to your body.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, you want to treat the internal stuff at the root level rather than just using another crutch for the rest of your life to treat something.
Okay. Coffee. Black, no cream, no sugar.
The best way to have coffee. I think coffee is kind of a stimulant. It opens up your cardiovascular system a little bit. If you are tired, sleep. Don't think you need caffeine. But a little bit of caffeine on a daily basis, I don't think it's a big deal.
Okay. Psilocybin, more specifically microdosing mushrooms.
I am a fan. I think it can help unlock your human potential.
Good answer. Alcohol.
Alcohol, toxic, makes hot people, which is the general population in the United States, even hotter, and makes the body work harder. And that means it will expend nutrients in order to detoxify your body. So if you really want to continue drinking alcohol, no judgment there at all. Just do it within reason and okay. Don't do it every single day.
We got three more. Masturbation.
Whatever floats your boat.
Okay, good answer.
I think it's
healthy
to have orgasms.
Okay. Keto diet.
The keto diet, the biggest problem I see with the keto diet is that it is low in potassium. Guys, sodium-potassium ratio should be 1:3, not the reverse.
Interesting.
So that means incorporate more plants. There's an electrolyte called keto electrolytes. Dr. Berg carries a great one, and it's high potassium, not high sodium, which is what I would recommend.
Okay, two more. Adderall.
Adderall, it's like drugs. It's like, you know, crack. And so I have taken Adderall for years because I was chronically fatigued, and it was the only way for me to operate. But I knew it was bad because I got worse over time. So I don't think it's a good thing at all.
Okay. And last one, marijuana.
Marijuana? Gosh. If that's your drug of choice, I still think that is better than alcohol. It doesn't touch your cardiovascular system.
Okay. Do you think that the negative impacts of marijuana on the brain is something that is serious? Or do you think people that use marijuana occasionally are okay and it's not doing any damage?
It is serious. To what degree, I am not 100% sure.
Yeah. Okay. What? All great answers. And the one thing, the message I think that I want to land here to the audience when I'm reading off all these things, and by the way, guys, a lot of these things on this list, I do. Some of them I don't do at all, but a lot of these things on this list, I do. And I think it's important for people to realize that you need to pick and choose what is going to be your vice. Do it in moderation. Do it safely. Do it responsibly, right? For example, if you eat extremely healthy and you are in the greatest shape of your life and you don't touch alcohol, but you do not wear your seatbelt when you're driving a car and you text and drive, you are putting yourself at risk, right? So we could eat extremely healthy. We could, you know, exercise every single day. But if you're not wearing your seatbelt when you're driving a car and you text and drive, you're putting yourself at risk, right? So we got to pick and choose which ones we're going to do. And I obviously encourage everyone to wear their seatbelt. And I very much so encourage people not to use their phone while they're driving. Ginger, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to hop on the podcast today. Again, guys, if you have not already checked out Ginger, I'm going to drop links to her Instagram, all her social media profiles. If this is on YouTube, the link's going to be there as well. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you haven't left a review yet, please go ahead and leave an honest review. We recommend 5 stars. Mama says, if you don't got anything nice to say, don't say it at all. Ginger, thank you so much for your time today. And I look forward to connecting again soon.
Awesome, Zach. Super fun. Thank you.